the agenda today. First, I'll mention 78A. When we have enough members here, we'll do a work session on that. In a moment, we'll do the hearing on Senate Bill 1071A, awaiting arrival of more members should we decide. I think we'll probably be deferring a work session pending some amendments on that bill. And on House Bill 2238, have we had any progress? I'll ask Annette Talbot about that.
Donuts.
We are on the record, by the way. Welcome. Anybody on the internet heard the reference to donuts? It has to do with the informal donuts from late arrivals, non-rule. But I thought we'd waive that for the rest of the session.
Of which the chairman has participated himself. Mr. Chair, just for the record, it does appear there's three other people that should be bringing donuts to us since they're not here.
That's right. Well, we should have the donut priority list. Anyway, I just asked Annette Talbot to give us a little progress report before we did anything else on some bills on 2238. Hi.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Annette Talbot, Legislative Coordinator for the Employment Department. I guess, Mr. Chair, what you define as progress is probably different than what we would define as progress. We did submit testimony as well as a hand-engrossed version of the bill so that members could take a look at the A7 amendments as they relate to the bill. We did speak with the governor yesterday and the governor's staff, and we remain unable to support the amended version of the bill for several reasons. Particularly because the bill continues upon closer scrutiny to present a conformity problem with federal law, which would have a potential grant and tax offset problems. In our review, we did factor to Department of Labor and have not yet heard back from them if that conformity issue were to actually be confirmed by the Department of Labor, then we would be very concerned about the bill going forward. I did, Mr. Chair, I hope you received my fax late yesterday about that.
Pause for a moment, and I should declare, since we started talking about a specific bill, I thought I was just going to get a generic statement. I will say that officially we're in public hearing on House Bill 2238. Please go ahead, and that will incorporate what's just been covered the last few minutes. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As the Dash 7 amendments are currently written, because Section 7 refers back to the fact that it would refer to claims filed after the effective date of the bill, all your employment activity that your claim is based on would still have a retroactive effect. So
yeah, let's pause for a moment then and cut to another chase. What would the position of the department and the governor be as to just doing Section 6, which is the pharmacist piece?
Mr. Chair, I did ask the staff that, given that they had trouble with the new test in Section 4, and my understanding is that they would still be opposed to the bill because of the policy letter that was attached yesterday to my testimony in regards to erosion of coverage, and that there does not appear to in the governor's position to be any articulable reason to address the pharmacists in a different way. And he would again invite the chair and any members interested to re-examine the 1989 adopted test to see if we can get bipartisan support and labor management agreement on how to amend that test if there are issues that need to be addressed.
Should we take away the current exemptions in the law for golf caddies and court reporters and all those people?
Mr. Chair, confirm with the governor's staff that he believes those should be revisited and plans on doing so.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes the hearing. Unless there's someone else who wanted to testify in House Bill 2238, seeing no one else, the hearing is concluded. We next have, remember, since we have a quorum present, we had a quorum for purposes of a hearing before, but now we also have a quorum for purposes of moving a bill. I understand there's been some agreement on Senate Bill 78, so I'll move us into work session on Senate Bill 78. Council, where are we on this?
Mr. Chairman, the committee has before it for practical purposes both the Dash A4 and the Dash A5 amendments. The Dash 5 amendments are conflict amendments. They're technical in nature. The Dash A4 amendments, as I understand them, are the result of a work group that met on this bill. And what those amendments do is amend a statute that requires the release of a youth that has been taken into custody parent or guardian, except where, under current law, there is an arrest warrant for that youth, or the person that took the youth into custody has probable cause to believe that the welfare of the youth or others may be immediately endangered by the release of the youth. And what these amendments do is to take out that word immediately to simply provide that if there is probable cause that the welfare of the youth or others may be endangered by the release of the youth, then that youth could be kept in custody.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Kozanski.
I assume that a lot of this, I know that Steve Carmichael has been involved with these discussions, that the removal of the immediate may actually, if it was not in place in statute before, may have kept Kinkle from being released. Based on the text of how it's written, it seems like what we're attempting to do is give a little bit more discretion as to how youth should be viewed at the time of the situation.
Yes, in fact, why don't we ask Larry Oglesby up, and if Mr. Myers wants to join him. All right, Mr. Oglesby, good morning. Welcome to the committee. Did you want to provide some comments on these A4 amendments? And the A5 amendments are simply conflict amendments.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Larry Oglesby, Marion County Juvenile Department, representing the Oregon Juvenile Directors Association. Mr. Carmichael's in Washington, D.C. today and could not be here, so I'm in here in his stead. What Representative Brzezinski indicated is, in fact, one of the issues related here. There was some discussion in the earlier amendments regarding assessment centers. You notice that has been taken out. What this simply does is create an opportunity for the law enforcement officer in the field to take greater opportunity to do investigation, find out what's going on with this youth before making that decision to release the parents or to adopt some other option. we believe this will create an additional option for law enforcement and enhance public safety. So we would support both the -4 and the -5 amendments.
Is there anyone else here that needed to offer some remarks on Senate Bill 78 or the proposed amendments? I don't see anybody volunteering. Any questions for Mr. Oglesby? President Bowman?
Mr. Chair, I have a question for counsel. And I guess I'm trying to see in this bill where this youth would spend his time in custody.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bowman, I believe that under, and I don't think that that provision is actually in the bill, but under the law, I believe that that is usually going to be in the Oregon, the custody of the Oregon Youth Authority. Is that correct, Mr. Oglesby, or where is that? No?
The local juvenile
Excuse me, local juvenile department, of course.
Mr. Oglesby, why don't you answer?
Chair Mannix, members of the committee, what this references is the decision by the law enforcement officer in the field. The options are, after doing a further investigation, to release to parents. They still have that option, or to take to a detention center if it's an offense that can be detained, or to take to some other place that's been designated by the court, such as a shelter of home or other option that the court has designated under the statute, under current law.
And that would depend on the circumstances of the given case.
Yes, it would.
For instance, you'd need secure custody in a detention center if someone had just shot somebody. On the other hand, if somebody is simply confused and needing some help, maybe taking him back to the parents, sitting down for a little while and talking. I'm just throwing out hypotheticals here.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Mr. Chair.
Just
a question. What happens to the discretion of the officer in view of Senate Bill 344, which we just passed, where there's mandatory removal to if a child brings a gun to school, there for up to 7 days. And then the House Bill 3444, which you were part of as well, where it eliminates some discretion there. So how will this affect an officer's discretion in a situation where there's another law that prescribes specifically?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sanceri, this provision would deal with the generic cases that do not involve possession of firearms or destructive devices. Where that comes into play, then that statute would be controlling.
Is there a conflict, Mr. Chair, between this and the bill we passed about homeless youth? Because, no?
No. Well, Mr. Oglesby, I'll ask you to confirm that, too. We did have Representative Piercy's bill, strongly supported by the City of Eugene. You're giving me that kind of look.
Yeah, it's the same. Basically, we're talking about, and this is kind of like the overall generic approach for how all youth should be handled, and then you're going to have different specifics that are going to override the generic, such as what Representative Sanceri said, and I believe the one that applies to the homeless is a very small portion because you're talking about an individual that fits certain criteria, and they are going to be treated, you know, it's limited as to what they can do, and that's to the parents or to the counseling or halfway house. This one here has an extra perspective that if someone has actually committed a what would be a crime, to be actually taken to a detention center.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Representative Bowman, the Dash 4 amendments do deal with the same statute that was dealt with in House Bill 2599, if I recall, which was the runaway bill. However, it would not, I don't see any conflict between the two, because what that bill did is to add a Section 3, and if there need to be conflict amendments later on, I believe the Legislative Council can do that.
Representative Hansen.
We sit in this marble mausoleum and pass this type of stuff.
No, mausoleum is for dead bodies.
Yeah. Well,
your point. What? And then when things get out in the community, then as Representative Sinceri was asking, what, you know, how will this affect the officer's judgment on the beat? There's a huge disconnect in what really needs to occur after we pass legislation like this. Then would be for a public safety council to sit down and work on some criteria for community by community, how they're going to react to this. I served with Multnomah County. I was on a committee that took almost a year in terms of developing the release tool for juveniles, in terms of how they decide who's going to be held at the juvenile facility, the assessment tool that the juvenile workers work each particular kid as they come in to make the determination whether they're going to be released or whether they're going to be held. And it's a long, involved process. And we need to have all of law enforcement probably on the same wavelength in terms of what's appropriate for the officer on the beat, where they're going to take them, whether they're going to be taking them someplace that has no interest in keeping them or holding them. And that's going to take an involved local process in order to really make it effective. But it needs to be done. This probably could be misused. On the other hand, that's up to local communities to determine how they're going to use this to serve kids well. And we're passing that responsibility on to them.
Well, this unlocks the door. The question is what goes through the door in the local community. Representative Krasanski.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to go ahead and move the Dash 4s to the SB 78A.
Colleagues, Representative Krasanski moves adoption of the A4 amendments to Senate Bill 78. Is there discussion on that motion? Is there any objection? Representative Bowman?
Objection.
All right. We'll call the roll on the motion to adopt the A4 amendments.
Putting in the marble mausoleum.
Oh.
Representative Hansen?
Yes.
Representative
Sinceri?
Yes.
Representative
Sinceri?
Yes.
Chairman Adams? Yes. Motion is carried. The A4 amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Move the Dash A5 into SB 78.
Representative Krasanski moves adoption of the A5 amendments, which are conflict amendments to Senate Bill 78. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing no objection, the A5 amendments are adopted. Representative Krasanski?
I move the bill as amended by this committee to the floor of the due pass.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there a discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Bowman?
I'm concerned about the A4 amendments because, at least I know in my county, if you're going to take a youth into custody, the only option you have is a correctional facility. We don't have places that law enforcement can just take and drop kids off for some kind of assessment. And so I believe that the default position will be putting kids in a locked facility. And so I can't support this bill.
President Krasinski.
I guess I would just ask the good representative to think about this, maybe not now, but in between, as to what the term custody is as compared to detention. I mean, we'll clearly those are probably the same. But the way I interpret the way what the bill will do is basically just broaden the ability for the officer in the street who has immediate first contact with the youth to make some assessments of their own as to the situation in dealing with the youth and getting them to the appropriate place, be it a custodial situation, which is detention, or to back to the parent. And lastly, if there is any type of youth nonprofit organizations that are dealing with youth issues, to if it has been identified by the county as a place. And Eugene, we have a facility called I'm looking at the name of Station 7, and I would assume that that is being incorporated by the court as a place for officers to be able to take a child. So I don't think it's as open and shut that it's either custody or not custody in the sense of being someone to keep there. And I guess I would be kind of amazed that Multnomah County does not have any type of facilities that are kind of a step down from a custodial setting that would allow the child to, one, be off the street, to maybe have some type of assessment or talk things out, as well as getting the child back to the youth.
Let's pause for a moment on that, if I may, Rose Pajanski. I think that we've got some help here from Mr. Oglesby, and I might even invite someone from the City of Portland Police Department to assist if they have some comments on this. Mr. Oglesby?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in relationship to Representative Bowman's question, the youth would only be taken to detention and held in detention, A, if they qualified for a crime severe enough to be detained. Secondly, Multnomah County does have in place a screening mechanism, which is basically designed to screen kids out of detention, not into detention. So only if they were taken to the detention facility, met statutory requirements for detention, and then passed that screening test, would they be detained. Otherwise, they would be released either to the parents or some other alternative in the community.
Mr. Chair, it's true, isn't it also true that it's not a jail cell that you keep them in? You're not bars holding them in. It may be a room, and if you're going to have an assessment of necessity, you have to be kept somewhere.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sinceri, a detention facility, if taken there for intake assessment within the facility itself, it is a secure facility. So it would be the equivalent of a jail cell, but it would be not put in the general population. It would be placed in a room for assessment. If a community, and this it would be up to each community to either do or not to do, were to develop an intake center, which would be a place in the community, it would definitely not be then a place with bars. It would be a place where they could be assessed and held pending the decision to release or not release.
Representative Hanson.
Well, one of the problems, I think Representative Bowman, we can work this out, that the detention facility is inappropriate for holding the kids. We've got an assessment tool that determines which kids would be held or released. What we don't have is any kind of protocols in place for the lesser secure facilities, because currently kids aren't taken into custody, so they're not taken in. There's no protocols in terms of how you take a kid that's just a danger to themselves, how you take them into custody, but then take them to a greenhouse project or take them to some other type, because that's not the law. The police at this currently simply can't pick them up. The only option they've got now is picking them up, charging them with a crime, and taking them to the detention facility. So there are no protocols in place. That's where I think the Public Safety Council has got to get involved in terms of working out the protocols and working with juvenile justice to figure out where this is going to fit. Because right now, you're right, it doesn't fit, but it'll never fit until the laws change, because there will never be a reason to make the changes if kids can't be taken into custody.
Let me do this. I'd like to invite one of the City of Portland's finest to come up to assist us with that as to what happens up in that City of Portland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Coffin. I'm the Central Precinct Commander of the Portland Police Bureau in Portland, Oregon.
Could you spell the last name, please?
K-A-U-F-F-M-A-N.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
And I haven't had a chance to brief Representative Bowman yet or Representative Hanson on this. Actually, at Central Precinct, we've had a gathering of folks who are interested in homeless and runaway and kids who are involved in minor scrapes with the law for about 7 months now. And this is in association with the Annie Casey Foundation out of Baltimore and in coalition with the juvenile authorities out of Multnomah County. Representative Hansen has talked about the risk assessment instrument that has been developed over the last 4 years, actually, to keep as many kids out of detention, out of lockup as possible. What we've done at Central Precinct is we have a location where we take children that are taken in for status offenses or minor criminal issues, for example, like prostitution, minor amounts of some types of narcotics, not heroin and cocaine, but marijuana and this sort of thing. Plus, shoplifting, theft three at the lower levels. These children are taken to Central Precinct at the discretion of the officer rather than taking them to the juvenile facility to be booked. They are turned over to a nonprofit organization that we have an agreement with called New Avenues for Youth in Portland. And at that point, what happens is they're triaged and try to find out what the best thing that we can do for this child. A large majority of our children that are brought in to the New Avenues for Youth Reception Center actually are homeless or runaways. And so the bigger concern for us and the bigger issue for us is either getting them reunited with their families, if that is appropriate, and it's not placing them back into a situation of danger, or hooking them up with the other appropriate resources so they're not just wandering around the streets and becoming not only involved in further criminal activities, but also becoming victimized by adults who are operating a large number of criminal activities in the streets, such as the sales of narcotics or prostitution or shoplifting and fraud and this sort of thing. It's been a very, very successful program to date. And as I recall off the top of my head, in the last 7 months, we've actually been able to divert over 400 children. Some of these are very, very difficult issues dealing with kids with mental health problems and drug and alcohol abuse and things like that. And the last thing I have to say, Mr. Chair, is that we are in the process now with Multnomah County making that a citywide option. So the pilot project is over with. What we're looking for now is a permanent location, probably in the downtown area, because that's where most of our runaway and homeless kids seem to congregate. But it will be a citywide option. Officers from Representative Bowman's constituency actually have brought kids down there, and we've dealt with those kids on a number of occasions. So the word is spreading among the officers, and this is a very good option for us, not only from the precinct commander's perspective, but from the patrol officer's perspective and the community's perspective.
All right. Thank you. Any questions? It's Major, isn't it, Major Coffman?
Commander, sir.
Commander, sorry.
Thank you.
Trying to read what's on your uniform.
Silver, not gold.
Oh, okay. Now the veteran will get me for this. Silver, not gold, so it's commander. No questions? Okay. We will proceed. We have in front of us the motion to adopt the bill, actually send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Is there further discussion on it? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on the motion.
Yes.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hansen? Representative
Sinden?
Representative Sinceri?
Yes.
Representative
Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 78 sent to the floor with a due pass. Representative Brzezinski will be the carrier on Senate Bill 78. That concludes the work session of Senate Bill 78. As a courtesy to the folks who are here from the Employment Department, I'd mention that I don't anticipate any further action today on House Bill 2238. I'm going to be requesting an A8 amendment, which just does Section 6, so we can see what people think about that.
Okay.
All right.
Great.
We'll move on to Senate Bill 1071 and move into public hearing on Senate Bill 1071. I see, yes.
You didn't have a carrier for 78.
Representative Brzezinski volunteered.
Okay.
Thank you. On Senate Bill 1071, as we call up Senator Frank Shields, I'd invite counsel to summarize the measure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Current law provides that before homeless individuals are removed from an established camping site, that law enforcement officials must post a notice in both English and Spanish at least 24 hours before the removal occurs. What this bill would do is to add a couple of provisions to that law and state that, in addition to that provision, that law enforcement officials need to post a notice, both in English and Spanish, at least 24 hours in advance of also issuing a citation to a homeless individual for camping on public property, or issuing a citation to a homeless individual for trespassing on public property. And I would emphasize that these additional provisions apply to homeless individuals, not to, as I read this at least, not to other persons who may be trespassing on public property.
Thank you. Good morning, Senator Shields. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Frank Shields. I'm the senator from Senate District 9.
Have you noticed how fast you can set bills when you ask?
You actually did it so quickly that you caught me off guard.
That's the name of the game, sir.
No, that's the guards play tonight. Never mind. That's for basketball fans, I think. I appreciate the summary of the measure that was just given, because it sets all this in historic context. In 1995, at the request of the Oregon Shelter Network and other advocates for the homeless, I introduced a bill that simply, I thought, was a nice humanitarian kind of thing to do. If you were going to sweep away a homeless camp, like under a bridge or something, please post a 24-hour notice. What that would do, in our thinking in 95, would be to allow the homeless individual to at least get their sleeping bag and get out of there, rather than having the sleeping bag, thrown in a dumpster. Because when you have next to nothing, to lose what little you do have is kind of not real humanitarian. At the same time that we did that, in the bill, we asked that if whoever was going to sweep away the homeless camp would, if they would contact a social service agency somewhere nearby, if one was available, and have that social service agency maybe send somebody down to the homeless campsite, because when a homeless campsite is about to be done away with, the individuals that are there might be at that moment more desperate than usual, and maybe we could get some people into counseling or into shelter or into some kind of help. That bill in 95 passed both houses overwhelmingly and was signed by the governor and, as was said, became law. I haven't heard of complaints from cities or towns about this bill, but I have heard some complaints from some social service providers, specifically Sisters of the Road Cafe in Portland and others, including an organization called JOIN, who testified in favor of this bill in the Senate committee that heard it. We heard it in general government on the Senate side. And the complaint was that the police were following the law in posting the 24-hour notice, but on occasion, if they found anybody, quote-unquote, at home at the homeless campsite, they would give them a fine, a $100 citation. Now, the problem with that, of course, is if you're homeless, you don't have $100 to pay a fine. If you had $100, you'd probably stay in a hotel room or a motel room or whatever. At the time that I brought the bill forward and it got a hearing, I began to really hear complaints for the first time about the bill itself. Now, the law has been in effect since 95, but what I heard was that, and I didn't have it available in committee, but there was a floor letter that was distributed to members of the Senate just before, and it's from the city of Portland, and you may have that today, I don't know. But the floor letter states that while this bill may have been intended to address problems encountered at established camping sites, the bill affects all public property and all individuals, regardless of whether they are found at an established campsite or not. Now, because of the concern about the definition of an established campsite, I had a conference call with the mayor of the city of Portland, and I'm assuming several of the commanders that are here from the Portland Police Bureau, 3 weeks ago. And because of this letter and because of the conversation, and there's another paragraph in this letter, and I would read this, it says the bill would make it virtually impossible to enforce trespassing violations on public property in a reasonable manner. That is because the bill, once again, is not limited to individuals that established campsites, but is directed at any public property and all individuals. So because of this letter, because that's the direction I thought they were going, I thought I had an understanding with the attorney in the city of Portland to do some amendments to the bill that would define what an established campsite is.
Yes. Let me help with that, Senator.
Go ahead.
How would you feel about adding to the citation statute a simple statement that it's an affirmative defense to a citation for unlawful camping if the citation was issued within 200 feet of and less than 2 hours before or after the posting of this notice, so that you've got a time and space exclusion for the unlawful camping citation?
Okay, let me react to that. I heard about that yesterday for the first time at about 4:30. Mark, who will be testifying in a few minutes, the lobbyist from the city of Portland, suggested that to me. I haven't had a chance to think it through, and I did not have time to take that to legislative council, and I wish...
We can take care of that.
Sure, I understand that. But in my conference call with the mayor and the city of Portland and the city attorney and the others present, and I have some of my staff present that were also involved in the conference call, with 3 weeks, I thought we could have got something back a lot sooner and been able to analyze it. I heard about it the first time.
Senator, what we're trying to get at here is your concern, which is a legitimate concern, is that you pushed through legislation that said before there's a, I'll call it a homeless camp, is cleared, there should be notice posted 24 hours before. And the problem is that when the people go out to post the notice, apparently, they're going around issuing citations at the same time.
On occasion. The statement's been made that they don't do it very often, but go ahead.
Is there another problem as to the issuance of citations other than that they're going out and issuing them at about the same time they're putting up these posters, these notices?
My approach at getting to the citation issue...
Senator, I'm just trying to figure out what the problem is first before we try to...
That is the problem, that individuals are being cited on occasion.
Please go ahead.
Okay. But my approach to the issue, since we didn't have anything back from the city of Portland yet, was to prepare an amendment, which we did, that more carefully defines what an established camping site is.
But what if we got around that by simply dealing with the posting? Because if the problem has to do with the posting, I'd like to analogize this to OROSHA and their consultations. We've had all kinds of laws where we want to encourage businesses to get the OROSHA inspectors out there, but not to site to do a consultation. And as part of it, we've sort of said, as to that consultation, when they come out, they shouldn't be citing unless they see something that is so extreme and immediate as to, you know, there's a saw that's about to cut someone's arm off. They're going to say, wait a minute, you know, this is an unguarded saw. Unless it's extremely dangerous, we try to encourage them to walk through. And then they might say, by the way, on this consultation, I have noticed some things that really need to be fixed. And at some other point, they may inspect, but then the business has a chance to clean up and fix up. So if I understood the concern here was you're going out, you've got a crew, they're posting these notices, and you've got some other people running around issuing citations, so these homeless folks are suddenly going to be cited to pay a fine that they can't afford to pay. If that was the issue, wouldn't the time and space affirmative defense to those citations take care of it? I'm just throwing out the concept, not the detail.
Yeah, I think that that's possible. I'd like to let other advocates that are here react to that as well in a moment. Unfortunately, Representative Mannix, you and I haven't had as much time to talk about the issue as probably we should have taken. I, like I said, just got this conceptually yesterday at 4:30 and didn't have a chance to think it through, didn't have a chance to take it to legislative council.
We won't be working it until we have a chance to get an amendment.
Right.
I'm sure you'd have a copy of that, too.
Right. The thing that strikes me is that the concern that seemed to be paramount in the city's mind was because of the way 1071 is written, somebody could go onto the property of City Hall and set up a campsite, and therefore it would be an established campsite, and they couldn't be cited for being there. It was never our intention to allow somebody to park on the sidewalk in front of Nordstrom's or inside a City Hall or something like that and make that a campsite. And that's why I had some amendments drawn up that simply said, you know, for instance, in the bill on line 12, after the word property, I inserted some language. And we don't have to use these amendments, but I thought it got at the problem, where it says, issuing a citation to a homeless individual for camping on public property, dropping the or, if the public property is an established campsite. Now, the problem that the city has with that, I guess, and Mark and I haven't had enough time to talk about this either, is that they don't want to too carefully describe or define what an established campsite is.
Mr. Senator, what I'd like to do is this. I'd like to simply ask for testimony this morning about the bill, the problem, and possible solutions, and we'll focus on technical pieces later on. I'm going to allow 30 minutes for this hearing because we have session this morning, and I want the members to have a little extra time since we were supposed to have a lighter agenda this morning. So that ought to be plenty of time to hear from everybody about the problem and solutions in the bill, and then we can look at the technical, how we can fix it, or work groups or whatever after that. But Representative Pruszynski, did you have a question?
I do. I guess I've asked the senator and his deliberations to consider the part that would, in fact, give the affirmative defense. It seems to me that if someone is, I mean, what I understand, there's actually a situation where there was someone that actually set up camp at the police precinct. And, I can see where that could be very disruptive to actually be able to run business.
Well, absolutely.
And it seems to me that it seems that if you give the affirmative defense where someone can come in and make their argument as to why they shouldn't be found guilty of what they may be cited for, it just seems that, at least my first brush of this, it's really, I mean, it's one thing to post. I understand if no one's there, you need to get word out that this place is going to be cleared out and give everyone an opportunity. It's another thing to basically say, well, we'll be back in 24 hours to cite you, and then you have this game of people potentially moving from point A to point B, and it's almost like you'd want to have, once you've given this person notice that it's going to be inclusive for the complete city, for all public property, et cetera. So, I mean, it can get pretty broad.
Right. I'm absolutely willing to negotiate and to consider all the possibilities. It was never our intention to create a situation where somebody could end up camping at City Hall. The person that camped, I didn't know this until you just said it, at a police precinct is probably creatively trying to find the safest place they can for a camp,
And they may be. I understand that it's not your intention, it wouldn't be our intention, but the reality is people are going to be creative to work the system as they need.
I'm certainly glad to work. I just hope that you'll listen to the arguments pro and con this morning.
All right.
You've got a committee out of control to the left here. I don't understand it. I'm just teasing.
Because it's to the left. That's the problem.
It's to the left.
Well, Senator, you just haven't had a chance to interact with the Magnificent Seven.
I see. Well,
okay, remember, it's to your left, my right.
I can tell.
Not hard.
All right. Thank you very
with
much.
With that, thank you very much.
Chuck Purris, First United Methodist Church. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Actually, Chuck Curry.
I'm sorry, C-U-R-R-I-E?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
My handwriting is just poor. I apologize. The bill that you have before you is reasonable, and it goes back to what we did in 1995, when, with a bipartisan majority in both houses and both chambers and with the signature of the governor, we thought we had fixed the problem by giving people 24-hour notice before we swept their camps. What's been unfortunate is that some local jurisdictions have been using a loophole by going ahead and citing people at the same time that they give them that 24-hour notice, which was not the original intent of the bill. And it has been unfortunate that the intent of the legislature has not been followed. I think what Senator Shields has done is come up with a good bill. I do support his amendments, which would clarify what exactly a homeless camp is. It is clear that we don't have enough social services in town, in Portland or any other jurisdiction to help with this homeless problem. By the own admission of the police bureau in the city of Portland, they're saying in their southeast precinct that they've been able to count upwards of 100 camps of people who are sleeping outside. If you go to any shelter in town, and the two that they cite most often are Transition Projects and Join, you'll find that they will not be able to get anybody into shelter. At Transition Projects right now, if you want to get into shelter, the wait is going to be at least 2 to 3 weeks before you can get emergency shelter in the city of Portland. Join, which offers outreach services, does not even have a shelter program. Every population group, whether it's homeless families, whether it's homeless kids, whether it's single adults, both men and women, there is an admitted lack of services. So I think this is a good bill. I do want to say also, since I've got the opportunity, that I also believe that it's wrong ultimately that we do this at all, that we cite people and arrest them simply because they're homeless and they have no other place to go. We would never allow this for any other population group in this country. It is something that is terribly wrong for us to be doing in the first place, and I think that it's something that one day we'll look back on and be embarrassed that as a society we've arrested people simply based on their economic status or cited them and given them a fine because of it. So, thank you very much, sir. Yes, sir.
Mr. Curry, I guess I just want one piece of clarification. You
yes,
said
sir.
We would never do this to any other SES group.
Mm-hmm.
In what context? I mean, are you saying that because someone's SES, they're going to get cited for trespass as compared to you or I if we have been told to leave a location?
I'm telling you that right now, because people are homeless, they're being cited and fined simply based on their economic status. Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your coming this morning.
My pleasure.
Mark Landauer. Do you have some others with you, Mr. Landauer?
Yes, I'm sorry. Commander Grubbs and Commander Kaufman.
Okay.
Join me.
Commander Grubbs and Commander Kaufman. Silver is Commander. Gold is Major. Can we use Major rank in the
Gold is Major in the Army.
Oh.
This is a Navy rank for some
reason. Oh, you're using Navy rank.
Yeah.
I wonder I was...
Those the uniforms are blue.
Yes.
Right, yeah. And we do have ships every so often.
That's right.
So the Portland Navy is here. Go ahead, Mr. Landauer.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mark Landauer with the City of Portland's Office of Government Relations. Thank you for holding the hearing today. I've given or passed out a copy of my testimony here today, and I think Senator Shields has appropriately addressed a couple of our concerns, and you'll note that on the second page. Just a couple highlights that I want to mention first. We certainly respect the author's advocacy for this group, and we understand that many of these individuals who are homeless need assistance, and the City of Portland has put a great deal of money, resources into providing assistance to the homeless populations. Nevertheless, we also believe that the way the legislation before you today has been drafted, it would have some pretty significant consequences. And that necessitates our opposition to the bill is at least presently drafted. I'd like to point out just one thing in my testimony. In 1996 and 97, the Portland Police issued approximately a total of 25 citations to campers in the Southeast Precinct alone. Most of those citations were issued for trespassing, drug charges, or for the consumption of alcohol. I make this point just simply because we do not issue these citations very often, but we need some type of enforcement tool to discourage prohibited behavior. Furthermore, we use the veiled threat, I suppose, of issuing a citation to encourage people to move into rehabilitation, to shelter, so forth. It's sort of the carrot and stick. And having that tool is a significant incentive to some individuals to seek assistance. We want to help these people out of their problems, And this is one of the tools that we have. We don't like to use it, and when the circumstances warrant it, we will issue a citation, but we rarely do. And I think the data bears that out. I'd like to introduce Commander Kaufman.
Sure. Mr. Chair, go ahead. Before we go to the officers, Mark, I guess a couple of questions based on what I've heard already. First, let me just get some history on this bill. Was there opposition to the bill when it was in the Senate?
Yes, sir. We testified in the Senate. I believe it was the General Government Committee at that time.
Okay. And what was the pass rate on this when it came out of the Senate?
I believe, and if my memory serves me correctly, the vote was 19-7 in the Senate.
The other question I have is, based on what Mr. Curry says, there's not adequate number of shelter spaces available for the city to service the individuals. And if that's the case, which I know for Eugene, we have faced pretty much the same thing, you're going to always have people who are not able to get off the streets, aren't able to get safe haven. Can you tell us what, if anything, the city of Portland has attempted to do to try to correct that? And I can just give as an example what we've seen is opening up where you can have camping in, let's say, church parking lots with the consent of the delegation and stuff like that. I'm wondering if there's any type of creativity that's going on to try to address the issue because of the lack of shelter space.
Chair Mannix, Representative Prozanski, actually, I do believe that the officers here could probably address that question better than I can, and if I may, I'd like to defer to them on that question.
Thank you.
Representative Jean Ellis' question first. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Landauer, what was the opposition in the Senate?
What was the opposition? Mm-hmm. Well, our opposition basically was encapsulated in the bill or in my testimony. You'll note on the second page I have approximately four paragraphs outlining what our opposition to the bill was. Essentially, that the bill would render trespassing on public property virtually useless in our estimation. Furthermore, from an enforcement side, an officer would have to determine the individual's housing status. For example, are you homeless or are you not homeless? And if you go into a court of law, were you able to prove that individual at the time of citation had an abode or did not have an abode? Those are just some of the technical problems that we had with the bill as written.
Mr. Lander, if you run across an individual in a park in a sleeping bag, you could make a pretty good assumption that they're probably homeless, because if they had a home, they probably wouldn't be sleeping in the park in a sleeping bag, right?
Unless it's a Girl Scout or a Boy Scout. Or a
Okay. But, I mean, I find that a little hard to believe that you would have to prove that somebody is homeless if they've got all their worldly possessions with them. Chances are that's where they live.
Chair Mannix, Representative Bowman, I think that's probably a generally correct assumption. However, if you look at the language regarding trespassing, one does not have to necessarily have a sleeping bag in order to determine whether that individual is or is not homeless, because trespassing does not necessarily entail camping or if you understand what I'm getting at.
I get that. Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
You're not actually citing people because of their economic status, but because, as you mentioned, there's some abuse of alcohol or some drugs or something like that, something beyond just being in the place that they shouldn't be.
Yep. Representative Sinceri, I'm Bob Kaufman from Central Precinct and Portland Police Bureau again. I can answer that from the Central Precinct perspective, and I'll let Commander Grubbs take care of Southeast because he has a somewhat different issue than I have. By and large, Central Precinct has a very large drug-free zone and prostitution-free zone in the downtown, Old Town, Chinatown area, and a large number of folks that we arrest for criminal trespass in the second degree is actually for violation of the drug-free zone and the prostitution-free zone. They're just not supposed to be there. A number of those folks tell us that they are transient or they are homeless and do not have a permanent address. Sometimes, or in many time cases, that's true, and sometimes that's not very true. I think that this last year we've only actually cited 10 people for prohibited camping, per se. Our biggest issue, at least in the Central Precinct area, in dealing with quality of life issues in both the residential communities that I have and the downtown business community, is that we have a large number of folks that are involved in other types of activities who typically get arrested for trespass in the second degree, and other crimes as well, drinking in public, drinking on the street, drinking in the parks, you know, and a lot of minor types of issues. So that's kind of the tool that we use. Prohibited camping, like I said, we've only issued like 10 citations in the last year for prohibited camping itself. I've gone out on a number of these sweeps that we used to have. We used to call them sweeps. We don't do that anymore. And we do that in conjunction with JOIN that was mentioned by Senator Shields a little earlier. So we are very sensitive to that issue. One of the things that I would like to address while we have a second is dealing with the homeless kids in our community. And how the city of Portland, this goes back to the general question, how the city of Portland has been attempting to deal with this over a period of time. We had no options for anybody under 18. It was not a very good idea to send a 14-year-old kid over to the Mission, for example. I mean, it just was not a very good environment for them to be in. We've done a number of things with Chair Bev Stein in the county, as well as the juvenile court authorities and the city council and the mayor's office, to try to develop a collaborative agreement in how we're going to deal with these kids. And I think we've got a very, very good start on that, which is a local solution to a very particular problem that we have in the downtown Portland area, typically with runaway children. Some of these kids are runaway for 2 days, and some of these kids are runaway for 4 years or so. My biggest concern, and the biggest concern of the committees that I serve on, is the victimology that's involved in younger children, and the fact that they impact the livability of the community and the safety of the community later on when they become adults and they're already deeply involved in criminal behavior sometimes, or they become social welfare issues, or they become public health issues or mental health issues for us in the downtown Portland area. So we've made some pretty good headway of that. When I was up here before, I mentioned New Avenues for Youth Reception Center. And one of the reasons that we were deeply involved in that program with the Casey Foundation is that we did not want to take these kids into detention. They don't belong in jail. They belong somewhere else where they can actually talk to folks and be dealt with in a very humanitarian way, but in a long-term way, not just a short fix where we're going to give you to a probation officer for shoplifting, and that probation officer may never see you again as long as you don't get into trouble, right? Now, we want a longer-term fix so that these kids actually become quality adult human beings in our community. So we've done that with children and focused on that. Now, with Commander Grubbs, last year, Central Precinct joined in on a, we joined in on a cooperative effort with JOIN and several other homeless advocate groups to try to deal with the homeless issue and the transient issue in southeast, the Central Precinct, and in the Far East County area. And I'll let Commander Grubbs talk about the collaborative agreements that we have with those. But essentially, we have a number of things that are already in motion, that are already there. My one big concern with this legislation as it's written right now has to do with the criminal trespass provisions.
I'd like to follow up. I think this might be a good segment, but I would like to get your response on this. Just looking at the bill, I'm wondering what your thoughts would be if we deleted the Section C, which is issuing a citation to a homeless individual for trespassing on public property, retaining the other stuff that is that's in the bill, and then limiting the affirmative defense that's on the back to where regarding criminal trespass and an incident involving camping. And if y'all could think about that as you're giving the rest of your testimony, and ask the chair when we have other people come up to
respond. I guess what I'm trying to figure is a way that we can keep with the intent of the 95 legislation without tying, I mean, to me, you're looking at a disjunctive when you have the two there. You're not talking about trespass in necessarily in relation to someone prohibitively camping. They can be completely separate issues, and where someone's not prohibitively publicly camping on public property, but they are, let's say, at an office building that's publicly owned, and they have been asked to move because they're not able to conduct the business they need, and then the trespass I can see in that. So if you could maybe structure your comments as well, that type of fit.
Chairman X, members of the committee, my name is Stan Grubbs, spelling on the last name is G-R-U-B-B-S. I'm the commander of Southeast Precinct with Portland Police Bureau. I have to give my comrades a lot of credit. They've kind of taken away my thunder, I guess, as far as what I want to say. But I need to let you know that as far as the creative out-of-the-box thinking started after about 2 years in a process of working through legislation passed in 1995 on the dealing with the issue of posting campsites for the homeless. And we determined that a lot of resources were being used by the police bureau. There was miscommunication or no communication between the advocacy groups, also for the homeless shelters. Due to the creativity of a certain officer, we decided that it was time to quit expending 22 police officers, several dump trucks, and a lot of ill will, and look at a better way of doing business. We started looking into other resources or services. At this time, one such service that we do use collaboratively with Central Precinct is a project called JOIN. It's an alternative service. They provide outreach. To address a concern by those who have given prior testimony, yes, there are limited shelters. JOIN is not the panacea. It's not going to cure the problem. However, it provides us and the community an alternative to try to reach out to the hardcore people who are chronic, perhaps, you know, do not want to change lifestyle. At the same time, trying to funnel those in that we find that simply want to find work, employment, and be off the street. I was provided a project report recently from JOIN. I received it yesterday, and my apologies for not providing copies. But successively, since July 1 of 1998, through cooperation with the police bureau and for us, as far as giving them information, they have been able to target 1,008 individuals that would have not been served if it had not been a collaborative effort. What we also do is, regarding the legislation that requires a 24-hour posting, is that in my precinct, with my neighborhood response team officers, it is very simple for us now. It's actually a godsend. My neighborhood response team officers make one phone call, one officer, to the director of JOIN. We identify certain target sites. He gives us a time frame that he is able to provide resources and that they will look into it to see what they can do to solve the problem first. And I think that's what we're looking at with the bill, is that we're looking at problem-solving tools for the community. Is that
the problem is this bill is overbroad from your perspective for the reasons stated by Mr. Landauer. How do you feel about the restricted notion of saying within 2 hours before or after of posting or within 200 feet of posting, or actually and within 200 feet of posting, that there shouldn't be a citation issued for unlawful camping?
I would answer that, Chair Mannix, is that I think that it will not have a significant impact on our ability to deal with the problem in cooperation with the other community services.
On the other hand, it will make some proponents of this issue understand then that, yes, people are protected, but given some chance not to be cited when the posting occurs.
Yes,
sir. The
zone
of protection, so to speak.
Yes, sir.
And that's not a problem for you.
I think that we'll continue to be able to deal with the problem, yes.
The reason I'm kind of moving things along here is that I've got two other witnesses and possibly some others who just arrived, so we want to try to accommodate everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bowman has a question.
Thank you. If I could ask Commander Grubbs, what happens when you encounter people who have severe mental health needs on the street?
Chair Mannix, Representative Bowman, the officers in that area that work in certain locations try to identify what social services are available. Again, we're very fortunate to work with JOIN. If it's we deal with a large Hispanic population now, So we're trying to interface more with Hispanic Access and those services.
Project Respond.
Project Respond also, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have another officer from the City of Portland just here to watch? All right. David Niebel, Oregon Law Center. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Okay.
Mr. Meyer, do you want to come up also at the same time?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm David Niebel from the Oregon Law Center. I'm here to testify briefly in favor of Senate Bill 1071. This is an important bill for legal services clients, especially in the City of Portland. Legal aid in Portland does represent folks who have been cited, and this is a recurring problem that they see. I might mention that...
Can I ask a quick question on that?
Yes.
Is this an indigent defense situation or just legal aid stepping in on its own on these citations?
I think this is legal services being contacted by people who have gotten these citations. It's not an indigent defense situation. I would like to mention that in the hearing in the Senate, there was a little bit more lead time. There were a lot of other organizations that showed up to testify in favor of this bill, including representatives of some of the programs that you've heard about today, including JOIN and others. I'd like to make just a couple of points. One is that receiving a citation under these circumstances, under the circumstances that you've heard of, constitutes yet another barrier for a homeless person who's really struggling to get off the streets. These folks are folks with large barriers to getting into permanent housing anyway, in terms of income, resources, references, and a citation, a criminal or quasi-criminal citation for either camping or trespass constitutes yet another one of these barriers. It also increases their indebtedness. You have to, in order to get into housing these days, the market is such a seller's market, a landlord's or a provider's market, that landlords are able to choose folks who have the least blemished records, and these kinds of citations constitute blemishes on records that are very difficult for these folks to deal with. I would also just note that there's been some testimony about the fact that many citations of these folks are made based on other kinds of infractions or offenses. And under current law, which is on page 2 of the bill at line 4, you'll note that these 24-hour notices don't apply where there are other grounds for law enforcement officials to believe that illegal activities other than camping are occurring. So it doesn't affect the ability of an officer to cite for drug possession or offenses or prostitution or anything of that sort. Those are my comments. I would urge you to pass this bill. I would also be interested in working on amendments that would make the bill more acceptable to the opponents.
Representative Przanski.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to throw out the same suggestion. Looking at the bill, David, for yourself and for Mr. Meyer, if you delete it, line 13, which is the issuing the citation to a homeless individual for trespassing on public property, take that completely out of the bill, and then on the back side, limit the affirmative defense, retaining as it is, if someone receives a citation for trespassing, that they would be able to use the limited affirmative defense if it pertained to an incident involving camping. What your thoughts would be as to tightening it up, because I see two different issues under B and C, and C goes beyond what I think the intent of the legislature in 1995, at least when I passed or voted for the bill, it was dealing with the camping situation. And what I'm hearing, well, I know from my own experience and practice, you can have an individual, homeless or not homeless, who are trespassing on public property, disrupting a situation that has nothing to do with camping.
So I'd like for you to consider that, if not now, in the future.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pozanski, I would simply say that we're not here advocating that people have the right to sleep in police precinct buildings or City Hall or on City Hall grounds. I think that's clear. And so I would be interested in working on that. I think that one of the things that Mr. Curry just mentioned to me in passing about this trespassing part of the bill, apparently the officers or the city has been issuing more trespassing citations in order to, well, it's perceived by advocates, in order to maybe circumvent the perceived prohibition on issuing camping citations. And I don't know how all of that can be resolved, but I'd be certainly interested in discussing that and trying to work that out. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Richard Meyer. I'm director of the Association of Oregon Community Development Organizations. That's the statewide association of CDCs, organizations that build affordable housing and manage related services in all of your districts across Oregon, including Salem CDC and Community Connections in LeGrand, farm worker housing in Woodburn, St. Vincent de Paul, Lane County, and Human Solutions, and so on. You've all got CDCs in your districts. I also was one of the founders of the Oregon Shelter Network 12 years ago, which brought an organization statewide that brought, because of the growing crisis in affordable housing, this issue, among others, funding issues, which you're hearing a lot about this session too, to your attention 4 years ago when this was passed. The reason why the legislation was originally passed, Representative Pozanski remembers, it was to give social service agencies a chance to work with people, campers, homeless people, to find alternative living solutions, situations, and to preserve the few meager possessions that homeless people might have. There's a little irony in citing people for trespassing. I have to agree with I agree with Chuck Curry on the almost absurdity of citing people for trespassing on property, the only property that they have access to or can afford, public property. It's not just Portland, but every community in Oregon. There are a total of 6,000 to 12,000 homeless people in Oregon, and if they don't have a place to stay, they're outside, and they're either on private property or public property. Where are they going to get in more trouble? And any trouble they get into, any citation, like David mentioned, is yet another barrier that social service organizations, all the people that want to help solve this situation, have to get through. The citations at the time of notice, which just began to occur during this interim, negates the very purpose that allowing social service organizations time to get in there and preserving possessions. It does not, this legislation does not prevent the police from protecting the safety of the public. It does not say that the police can't enforce other laws against drugs, prostitution, disorderly behavior, and so on. You know, and I'll remind you, we all need reminding that those people, homeless people that are part of criminal activity, are a small portion of homeless people. Now, that is criminal activity aside from trespassing, which, again, I think is part of the nature of the problem. If we have to have citations, then they need to be, as they were in legislation 4 years ago, part of a carrot and stick approach. What's occurred is with citation on the spot is, or even within 200 feet or 2 hours later, is you lose the carrot in the approach. The stick approach does not work. It's by itself. You've got to have time for people to get help from social service organizations. You've got people sometimes that are because of all sorts of stress that are less inclined to be in a good mood or have the social wherewithal to come in and get their property on time. They may be camping because they have a pet that is not allowed in the shelter. That all takes time to take care of. 24 hours is a reasonable time. It was a reasonable time 4 years ago. It's a reasonable time now. If I could mention just a couple more things. The organization JOIN that the officers mentioned that they're working closely with is one of the organizations that brings this legislation to you. So JOIN itself, part of the partnership, and those partnerships are important, saw that there was enough problem to bring this legislation to you. We support, on behalf of community service, community-based organizations all across the state, it's not just a Portland problem, support this legislation because it treats homeless people like people, not criminals. Thank you.
Representative Brzezinski.
Here's the situation I just can't get beyond. You have somebody who is homeless or not homeless that's in a public building, and the way I read this now, an officer would not be able to cite that person for 24 hours if they're in the public building. What happens at 5 o'clock, 5:15, whenever the building is supposed to be shut? I mean, do you just leave the person there overnight and come back the next day?
Well, I think that if I were in a building in the police bureau and they were going to shut the doors, they would be able to treat a homeless person as well as the same as me. I don't think I have the right to stay on property when they're locked the doors after hours. Aren't there are hours of public...
Mr. Curry, by the way, raised his hand back. Why don't you come on up, Mr. Curry, if you wanted to respond to that question also.
But Mr. Mayor, I guess the way I'm just reading the literal, my interpretation of 913 does not have any of these exceptions to citing an individual. In this particular case, it says a homeless individual for trespassing on public property. It doesn't say outside public property. So if you're someone at City Hall or any other public building that's ready to shut down, I mean, what do you do? I mean, I see the problem that we need to be able to address to make sure we are intent with the 95 legislation, but not to the point of where we're going to make a system ineffective for other reasons.
Sure, if I might, Chuck Curry, First United Methodist Church. I think you're right. There's some confusion there. And I think what Senator Shields is offering is amendments that clarify the language of what a homeless camp is, so that we know that we're not... I mean, I've never seen anyone, for all practical purposes, establish a homeless camp inside of City Hall or inside of the Portland Police Bureau. You know, it just doesn't happen. What we're talking about is something different here. Senator Shields is offering language that clarifies that for you.
What I don't understand is why don't these social service groups get together and establish a facility or a place that they can call a homeless camp?
Sir, that's something that's been under discussion for a long time, and the mayor's office opposes it.
If I could add.
All right, Mr. Meyer, do you want to respond to that?
Yes, sir. That is one of the solutions that organizations have brought to the legislature, along with a very much needed funding to build affordable housing, rental, home ownership. All of our organizations have programs that move people from homelessness to home ownership. They're very effective. They're cost effective. They can leverage the state dollar.
The short answer is yes, you're looking into it.
Yes.
Okay. We've proposed it for 13 years. I've been proposing that very solution.
Right. Mr. Chair, I just want to put this in the context. When I read what's going to be the law, if this passed out of this as it did the Senate, it's going to say under Section 1, law enforcement officials shall post a notice written in English and Spanish 24 hours in advance of, and then it has A, B, or C. And the C basically is issuing a citation to a homeless individual for trespassing on public property. They are not required, I mean, there's no connection to camping under C.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the issue that I see glaring here that's going to make it very ineffective, and that's why we do need to work on that.
I agree. All right. I'm fine with that.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
I suppose you could post a notice on the doors of City Hall that after 24 hours, you're going to begin issuing citations for homeless individuals for trespassing on public property anywhere within the city of Portland.
that there might be a nexus problem as to whether the notice was sufficiently connected with the other property. I'm saying this whimsically, of course. I think Rosa Brzezinski has pointed out a very serious problem with the bill. Do I have any other witnesses signed up who want to sign up? All right. Seeing no other witnesses, the hearing on Senate Bill 1071 is concluded, and we are adjourned. Thank you all. Okay.